Jordan.
Jordan.
Yeah.
Jordan.
Yeah.
Why'd you come to Egypt? Why'd you come to America?
For a job.
For a job?
Yeah.
You know it's illegal to cross the border like this, right?
Yeah.
You don't care?
Yes, I'm okay.
Hi guys, where are you guys from?
Egypt.
What country? Egypt?
Egypt.
Where are you from? What country?
I am from Turkey.
Turkey?
Yeah.
All Turkey?
Kurdish.
Yeah.
Vija America.
Vija
America.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you, America.
Where are you from?
From Egypt.
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 Okay.
Egypt.
Egypt. Guys, we got some pretty stunning data from our CBP contacts. Since October 1st here in San Diego sectors, there's been about 260,000 illegal immigrants apprehended by Border Patrol. We're told of that number, 78% of them have been released into the United States. And we're told that's primarily because a lot of the people crossing here are coming from countries where it is very difficult to deport people. They're not afraid of deportation. You heard that Jordanian guy tell me when I asked him, you don't care about crossing illegally? He says, yes, I don't care. We'll send it back to you.
Well, there's good reason.
But, you know, there's not an issue there. This is still, I think, that and the economy. It's like if you had to pick which one was the biggest, like if you had to pick the singular biggest issue to get Biden on, what would it be? What would it be on? Does it, like, for real, do we know? Can we say, like, what it would be on?
Border includes the economy, too, so probably.
Yeah, I know. I was, like, thinking about this. So when I stack the show, one of the things that I think of is how we're going to approach, like, how am I going to break down, you know, all of the biggest issues that we have, and then kind of, you know, build the show around that. I'm looking at this, I'm like, well, Jiminy Christmas, what is the biggest issue? Because the borders is a huge issue, but then, you know, we also have the economy. I'm not going to even get into the foreign policy and the two tiers of justice. Where else we got? Housing market. Wait to hear some of the headlines I have for you about that. A lot, right? So this I feel like is such a huge issue. And while I love following the Hunter Biden trial, I do want to make sure that we are, you know, also hitting all of, you know, we're covering this stuff that they're wanting to hide. So welcome to the show. Dana Lash with you, top of this first hour. And we're looking over because the executive order that he signed yesterday, there's tons of loopholes in this, and we're going to go over those with you. So we've got that. We're also going to get into the latest with the Hunter Biden trial. The drama continues, and it's only going to get more dramatic. I think it's actually already started to get more dramatic because they had, I'm sorry, I'm getting all the women confused. The ex-wife, Kathleen, is on the stand right now. The other one, sorry, there's a lot of women. Haley, who was his sister-in-law, former, I guess, and then lover, she's expected to testify as well. And, geez, can you imagine being his Instagram influencer wife? Well, you knew what you were getting into, so you knew. All right, so that's started. We're also going to get into later on, I got some polling for you. The GOP needs to right the ship. There's a couple things they're doing right now. They're bad. And then we've got some culture stuff as well. And of course, you know, tomorrow is the 80th anniversary of D-Day. So we have, as I do every year, a special look back. And I always like to do a deep dive on parts of World War II history because I'm a major World War II buff. I think I've seen almost every single film that you could make. I think I've seen every single documentary, including the ones that were redone and colorized. There's so much of the story to tell, but this, I think, is the last year where you're really going to have these guys. And it's stunning because what happens after that? You know, who tells those stories? I get chills thinking about it. Oh my gosh. My kids know. My family knows. I'm watching one of two things. I'm either watching a historical documentary, a horror film, because they call me, and or a World War One or World War II documentary, preferably World War II, because I like some of the battles that took place. So, I mean, there's so much history there, and there's so much to learn from. What happens to these amazing stories, and what happens to the immediacy of what took place there? Do you know what I mean? it's a living history while they're with us, and it's immediately accessible. Do you ever look back and think, I wish I would have talked to more World War II vets? It's kind of hard because they didn't really talk about it. It was like kind of pulling teeth to get stories out of these guys, because what they saw, I mean, good heavens, I can imagine I wouldn't want to talk about it either. My grandfather was very, very limited in what he would share. And he saw some stuff in the Navy out in the Pacific. And he was a gunner on the USS Alabama. And then our other grandfather was in Normandy. And he never talked about it. And it's just, I think it's important to share those stories because you have that immediate access. Anyway, we're going to be talking about that tomorrow, the 80th anniversary. So let's get right into, just let me, we got some, starting right off the top, this Wall Street Journal article. Do you guys see this? Now, two things to note. The first thing is that they talked to both Democrats and Republicans. The second thing to note is that the Biden defenders are trying to discredit the story because they talked to Republicans. So they're trying to act like because Republicans were included, that it's a smear job. But again, they talked to Democrats and Republicans. The Wall Street Journal piece says behind closed doors, Biden shows signs of slipping. They spoke to a lot of people, the Wall Street Journal did. And they said that the 81-year-old president has performed poorly at times. Pause right here. Let's go back to that interview, the her interview, because they're fighting right now to get those, and by they, Republicans, trying to get those transcripts released, right? And what was said of Biden and his mental acuity as to why he couldn't stand trial? Kane, do you remember? What did they say about Biden? Why couldn't he stand trial?
He was an elderly man who had poor memory.
He had poor memory. He was not mentally fit to stand trial. Pretty amazing, right? So that, let's just pull that right in with this story. So you have this Wall Street Journal story, and they interviewed tons of people. They interviewed a bunch of people that serve in the Biden administration, work in the Biden administration. And they interviewed a lot of Democrat allies. They interviewed a lot of people for this. And so it's not like a partisan article, because they interviewed really a lot of people. It gets into what some of the Republicans have witnessed, but also a lot of Democrats that didn't really want to go on record because they don't want the retribution of having done so. So this is, it's a very stunning piece. And it really goes into what the her testimony, what he was saying behind closed doors with that. Remember, they also said that they had edited, if you remember this, they had edited the transcript that Biden, from Biden's testimony. Don't forget that. They had edited it. Now, remember what they said about the editing aspect of it. Do you guys remember? They said that they had taken out redundant phrases like and if the. Now, when you hear him speak, he will repeat things, and it has nothing to do with a stutter. He repeats things because he loses his train of thought and he just kind of rolls off, right? Why can't we hear the audio, not just the full transcript that was edited? Why can't we hear the audio of it? They want the tapes. Why can't we hear the audio of that? Because don't you think that's significant? There's one thing if you're editing things because somebody said, oh, and this happened, right, as opposed to, and then you edit it and said, and this happened. That happens a lot of time in newsprint. That's why you'll see not really so much parentheticals, but bracket ellipses. Some of the marks, it's to edit out some of the redundancy. I do that a lot on my newsletter. If I'm looking at a transcript and I'm quoting it, you know, I may take like one conjunction or like one preposition if they're trying to emphasize a point. There's a difference in doing that and a difference in showcasing whether or not it is a mental acuity issue, particularly when you've heard him speak. I mean, my gosh, you saw the video that we played yesterday for you. That was toward the end of the show, right? That video that came out where he had given his remarks and he turned and he was kind of shuffling off the stage, and they were shouting questions at him, and they asked one particular question of him about Israel, and he stopped real weird, like right in front of the teleprompter, and he turned and looked like a man possessed. That's like a horror film. You know, Kane says that old people aren't innocent. That's like a horror film where it's like the bad guy is like an elderly man and he's really a demon, right? It's totally like that. Kane, I felt you on that one. You're vindicated, I think, in that instant.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, there's a difference, right? Isn't there a difference? That's what I feel like we should know that, especially after they admitted to editing it. Now, here's the other reason why I feel like we need to have access to this, the recording of the testimony. Because, and let me tie this into the Hunter thing, because of what happened with the Hunter case. So the laptop has been entered into evidence. Do you guys remember the 80-something? How many, was it 80-some-odd? How many, you had the two spy chiefs, both of whom compromised themselves under oath. You had all of these officials that were in the National Security Council, that were in CIA, that were in FBI, that all signed this giant letter saying that this laptop was Russian misinformation. And they knew it wasn't. In fact, one of them came out later and said, yeah, well, we knew it wasn't. We just did it. So the fact that they were so willingly ready to lie to us about that makes me completely positive that they would lie to us about this. You see what I'm saying? So, yes, you owe it to us. That's the problem of not being transparent and lying to the American public. You don't get to now keep things privileged. We don't trust you, and for damn good reason. So this Wall Street Journal piece, pretty stunning, because it was even Mike Johnson was talking about this stuff. They talked to him. Lorraine says it was like 51. It was a herd of them. He had sat down with Mike Johnson talking about policy changes. And Johnson said that he had worried. And this is why, if you get the Substack newsletter, why it was a fake Time magazine cover. What does he remember? That's why it was the image that I included, because we were getting into this today. His memory had slipped, according to Johnson. Biden's memory had slipped, and I'm looking at the Wall Street Journal piece, about details of his own policy. So in a conversation with Speaker Johnson, Biden was struggling to remember his own policy. And they were having to like cue him like, oh, well, this happened, Mr. President. And then you had this. This was also an issue. They had to like cue him on things, on his own policy, guys. His own policy. That's kind of a big deal. So they're freaking out about this right now, because the polling was showing that, you know, Americans are asking, what's happening with him? Why is he like this? Why is he not able to remember anything? Why does he seem so antagonistic? Golly, I haven't even touched on the Time magazine interview. Jiminy Christmas. Guys, we're going to have to jump into this, too. The Time magazine interview that he gave. Holy cow. He challenged the reporter to a fight, apparently. And it got really bad. It got really bad. He said, quote, that he was asked, large majorities of Americans, including the Democratic Party, tell pollsters they think you're too old to lead. Can you really do this job as an 85-year-old man? Biden says this, quote, I can do it better than anybody you know. You're looking at me. I can take you too. What? So wait, you can't challenge the president to fight you because the Secret Service will get involved, but he can challenge you.
Yeah. What if you accept? Can you accept?
Yeah, can you accept it? Like, could the reporter go, okay, I'm your Huckleberry. Can you do that? Or is Secret Service like, no. I'm just wondering. I'm just asking a question we're all thinking about. All right, so I got a lot. Good heavens, we're not even halfway through the first segment with the content. We got a lot. I got to get into some polling with you as well. Good and bad. There's good and bad. And then I think Star Wars is dead. Why do they keep shooting it? Our partners, Gold Co. Precious Metals. Look, you're going to need some gold and silver, particularly if the economy keeps going down the path it's going. You need some protection. You need to protect and diversify your savings with precious metals like gold and silver before it's too late. And there are thousands of concerned Americans, myself included. We don't want to jeopardize what we've worked so hard for. We don't want to watch the government keep putting savings at risk with national debt and everything else. So right now, you can get a free 2024 wealth protection guide from Gold Co. It's going to arm you with everything you need to know about how precious metals can help you in the face of inflation, war, exploding national debt, so much more. And you could be eligible for a 10% instant match and bonus silver while supplies last. So I wouldn't sleep on that. And Gold Co., thousands of five-star reviews, perfect rating from the Better Business Bureau. And they've helped people like you and me place over $2.5 billion in gold and silver. And they want to make sure that you understand the economy of how it all works, how gold IRAs work, and they want to make it easy for you to get the benefit of owning actual physical gold or silver. It's a very important part of your retirement and savings. No pressure. Visit DanaLikesGold.com. Get your free gold kit from Gold Co. Learn how to get $10,000 in bonus silver and get your complimentary wealth protection kit. Visit DanaLikesGold.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So apparently the Guardian says U.S. maternal mortality rate is far higher than in peer nations, according to report. Alarming disparities persist. They're trying to drive the issue of race in maternal health. because everything has to be racist. Racist. R-A-Y-S-I-S. Racist. It has to be. And it was a brief released by the Commonwealth Fund. I really don't care what a foreign entity has to say. Don't care. Moving on. So because of the ruling in New York, technically Donald Trump is banned from 37 countries as a convicted felon, including major allies like Canada and the UK. He would have to have special permission to enter countries to maintain foreign relations, unless that's the other reason why it's got to be overturned on appeal. And we're going to go through the appellate courts. It's fine. But that's kind of crazy. But what gets me is that dirty ginger that what is him? He's the spare and his yacht girl wife, the suitcase D-lister, Z-lister. Doesn't he have like his records being hidden? I think he actually could be a felon. And yet we let him in here because I'm Prince Harry. Burp, burp, burp. All right. In New Jersey, they really can pick him. A deceased congressman won the primary. Representative Donald Payne, he's a Democrat. He won the Democratic primary in New Jersey's 10th congressional district, despite the fact that he was dead.
And he voted too.
Unbelievable. Their filing deadline already passed at the time that he kicked the bucket. So he ran uncontested. And the Republican candidate won his party's primary for the district uncontested. So now they're going to try to get a nominee to replace him on the general election ballot. But he's totally dead. This is like a Mel Carnahan thing. Also, the Colorado Republican Party is under fire because they are being accused of a disgusting Pride Month mailer declaring that God hates flags. I just maybe don't think that that was the way you should have put it. But, you know, when you make an idol of how you have sex, yeah, that is a sin. Like when you're prioritizing that over everything else, I mean, that's all, you know, come on, that's idolatry. We got more on the way. Stick with us. Black Rifle Coffee Company. It's the only coffee that I drink because everything else is commie swill. Every time you don't drink Black Rifle Coffee, Mark's wins. You can save 20% using code Dana. But no, seriously, it's the best coffee you're going to get. They have the best beans. They bring them to their facilities in Utah and Tennessee, and they roast them all throughout the week. They hire veterans and active duty. And everything that they do, they pay homage to American culture and military history. And this is one of the reasons why all of these other big coffee companies have put their crosshairs on Black Rifle Coffee, because that's a market that, I mean, think about it. Everybody drinks coffee. It doesn't matter what your background is. And when you have so many people going to Black Rifle Coffee, your mainstreaming, you know, firearms, your mainstreaming American values, they have like entire roast lines that are dedicated to first responders and police, and their coffee is just good and it's affordable. It's more affordable than that other stuff out there. They have tons of choices too. Ground, whole bean, K-cups, ready to drink, really cool apparel, kettles, grinders, mugs, so much more. Everything you need for the perfect cup of coffee. And you're supporting American veteran-based jobs from start to finish, which is awesome. Veteran-owned and veteran-run. I only drink Black Rifle Coffee. I'm not even kidding. I do not drink anything else. And you can try it for yourself today at blackriflecoffee.com. Join that coffee club and you can choose your roast, your frequency of shipment, and it's shipped for free to your door. You never have to worry about running out of coffee. So try it for yourself, blackriflecoffee.com, 20% off with code Dana. 20% off using code Dana at blackriflecoffee.com.
The Democrats are counting on your economic ignorance so they can get reelected. The left wants you to think that oil companies and grocery stores are ripping Americans off. Meanwhile, they just want to get back into office to keep printing trillions of more dollars.
Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
Today, I'm announcing actions to bar migrants who cross our southern border unlawfully from receiving asylum. Migrants will be restricted from receiving asylum at our southern border unless they seek it after entering through an established lawful process. And those who seek to come to the United States legally, for example, by making an appointment and coming to a port of entry, asylum will still be available to them. Still available.
See, of course it's still going to be available to them. There's so many loopholes in this, in his, it's amnesty. And that's what he said he wanted to do. Welcome back. Dana Lash with you. Bottom of this first hour, you can listen coast to coast. You can also stream the radio program on X. You can find us on Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, and there's a chat and there's all kinds of good stuff. Find us on Substack as well. The newsletter's great. You got to read Lorraine's piece, The Legal Deep Dive, because she loves following this stuff because the rest of us get in the weeds and we're like, we get lost. So you got to go and read that. All right. So I wanted, where's, I lost my, okay, here it is. I wanted to touch on this too. This, So he's saying that he's asylum is still available, and you got to realize that not everybody qualifies for asylum. And I cannot tell you how many people I have spoken to in the last like 10 years who get so livid at the abuse of this. And they're all legal immigrants. They're all people who come over here and they become Americans. And they are so livid with that process being abused. I've met actual asylees, people who actually had to flee either Colombia or Venezuela, a lot from Mexico, because they either were standing against the cartel, testifying against the cartel or something, and they had to actually flee. I mean, I met a woman who's a business owner now. She owns like multiple businesses. She works in international business. She works in data management with data centers. So she has a lot of work that she does in India. And she was telling me how when she was a child, her family had to flee. They were in, I think it was Mexico or Colombia. They had to flee because her father was basically stabbed in the back by his brother, her uncle, who decided that he was going to start laundering money for cartels. And then after the brother died, her father was going through the books and, you know, taking an account of everything and realized what was going on. And he was a very devout religious man. And he was like, we're not doing this. This is absolutely, we're not. And he stood against the cartel and they killed him. They blew up the family's house. She said they even set her swing set on fire. And they had to flee in the middle of the night, her mother and her brother. And they came, and they became asylees. That's an actual case of asylum. It made such an impression on her. And she's so livid. She said the process has been made harder for people who are seeking asylum because of all the people who are claiming asylum. So it's actually hurting the people that they're claiming to help. Audio soundbite 2, this was the flashback that Biden, remember this, he promised all of this. He undid 90 orders within the first 100 days. It's an order a day. Listen to this, the flashback audio soundbite 2.
First of all, every executive order this president has issued relating to the border and relating to dealing with the Hispanic community is going to be pulled back. We're not going to be fooling with that.
Won't that restart a brand new border crisis? I mean, what would you do with all those people in camps now waiting in Mexico?
It will if we don't do it well.
Those asylum seekers that are on the other side of the border now in camps going to be allowed to come and do their claims inside the United States, something that has not been afforded.
It's the first time ever you've had to seek asylum in a third country. It's outrageous. It's outrageous.
It's not, but he said he was going to do that. Can I just point something out? That was in 2020. I think he's had a stroke in office.
He probably has.
Guys, it's been 4 years. Compare Biden then to Biden now. Oh my gosh. It's not me just, right, Kane? That's not just me.
Nope.
Steve, you notice a difference, right? You see all this audio too. You notice a difference. Even just like the strength of his voice and the way there's everything. Every physical optic, the way he sounds, the way he speaks, his enunciation, the rhythm in the way he speaks. Oh my gosh. Every time I see, and that's 2020. That's after he's been elected.
Was it right before or was it right after?
Okay. Because I know he talked about, well, he had a press conference almost every time he put out a press thing almost every single time he undid an order. That's just a 4-year span of time. You cannot tell me that he did not suffer another major health issue when he was in office. I would not believe you if you told me otherwise. I think he has. I don't know how you can look at him now and think that he hasn't. For real. How in the world? He can barely walk now. Barely walk. To the point where they didn't even think he was mentally competent to stand trial, but he can run the White House? Seriously, he can run the United States, but he's not fit enough to stand trial? That's terrifying. Who the hell is running this country? It's not him. That is terrifying. That's just 4 years ago. Golly. Well, they came out and they were trying to say that it was an amnesty. They keep acting like, well, it's just making asylum easier. Well, Kathy Hochul She's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. She kind of came out and said what we were all thinking. We knew it. Audio soundbite 5. Listen to this.
President Biden's been trying to get immigration reform since his first day in office. So this should not come as a surprise to anyone. You have to do an end run every once in a while, and that's exactly what today is all about.
Wow. She's so uncomfortably honest for them. Right? Oh, yep. And then audio soundbite 3, Jen Psaki admits she knows that this executive order is just political. She knows. Democrats all know. They all know this. This has nothing to do with assisting people who are trying to immigrate into the country. I mean, immigrate legally. He doesn't do a damn thing to help them. Listen to this. Audio soundbite 3.
And regardless of who's mad about the details of what's in here and what isn't in here, it's a political vulnerability for the president and his campaign. They know that. They knew they would have to do something like an executive order before the election politically as well. And that's what we're seeing play out.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that's pretty amazing. It is. If you've immigrated here legally and you've done everything you were supposed to do, I would feel livid at this. I would be so angry because you want the people who want to come and they immediately start by acknowledging the law and following the law. Those are the people you want. And instead, it's like they're bending over back. It's almost like a slight to them, right? What have they done in D.C. to make the process easier? I think that there are things that you can do to make it easier. The first thing is that we don't have a merit-based policy. It's based on, you got family here or not? Every other country in the world, you have to demonstrate merit. I mean, hell, even third world countries, if you're trying to go there, you got to demonstrate merit. It's not like that. The United States is singular in that we are the only country that is like, oh, well, if you have a blood relative, okay, you got family there, go ahead and go. That do you see how that complicates it, especially when you're trying to get people who have skills and who want to come and add to the tax base and they want to come and raise, you know, Republican voting Americans. Oh, wait, that's the issue right there, Kane. I think Republicans should be registering voters at the border. Look, if Democrats are going to do this and if they refuse, I look at it in a very Machiavellian way. Go ahead and start registering voters down there. Register them as Republican. Go and start down. Go to the border and start electioneering. Go and do it. That would scare the hell out of Democrats. Like, all this stuff where they allow like mail-in vote, like I don't believe in mail-in ballots. I like to go the day of elections. But at the same time, if Democrats are going to give me a tool to abuse, I will abuse it. Oh, I will absolutely abuse it. Oh, you want to have like forever early voting? I will go around my neighborhood and I'll take every Tom, Dick, and Harry and every old person and young person who's 18, maybe. I'll take them. I didn't say I was cheating. I'll take them to go vote. I'm not going to lie. I will do all of that. We'll mail in ballots. We'll start lining up. We'll go to the Kroger, Kane. That's what Republicans should be doing. I understand it. See, I think you have to have people like me so that you can have the people who go, we're going to do everything above board, because I won't. And you need those people. You need the people who won't do things above board necessarily all the time so that you can have the people who really stand tall about doing things above board. I'm just saying, I'm not breaking any laws. I'm not breaking any laws, Kane. I don't recognize the merit of those laws in the first place, so I can't. I don't feel bad about breaking a law that I think is nonsense. I'm just saying. But that's what Republicans should be doing. But they're not doing that. You know what they're doing? They're doing some stupid stuff. Can I talk for a moment about this? I agree with my friend Britt Hume. Britt Hume is one of the funniest cantankerous people I've ever met. He is hysterical. He's upset because Lara Trump is blasting a Senate candidate for not being loyal to Trump. Can I just be really straightforward about something? They've been going after a number of people. Now, I don't like Larry Hogan, so I agree with her. Larry Hogan's an anti-gun guy. I agree with her on Larry Hogan. Larry Hogan, if you're anti-gun, you betrayed me first as a voter. You betrayed me first as an American. I don't give a rat's ass if you betrayed. I'm not talking about betraying Trump. It's all about me, the voter. See? Get over Trump. It's about you, the voter. If you're anti-gun, you betrayed the voter. If you're high taxes, you betrayed the voter. We are the ones who get betrayed. That's how Larry Trump needs to look at this. Not about whether or not you betrayed Trump. Did you betray the voters? You were anti-gun. Did you betray the voters, Larry? That's how this needs to be looked at. They need to stop going after people like Bob Good and endorsing all of these rhinos in these different races. This is the quick fix to getting an endorsement from Trump. Doesn't matter if you have a super moderate background or, hell, if you were a Democrat a heartbeat ago. If you come out there and you do all the optic things and you kiss the ring and do all that stuff, you guys know this is true. I don't care if you like him. You guys know where I stand on 24. I want to win. I'll roll over your grandmother, but I'm being honest and you know I am. They do all this stuff. You get the endorsement. He'll endorse you over the actual conservative record guy or girl. You can't be doing this stuff because who you endorse is a part of upholding your promise to the voter. You see how this works? I do not pledge fealty to anybody. And that includes Ron DeSantis. I like DeSantis in the primary. But if he went out there and was like, kiss the ring, I'd tell him to go pound sand. I don't do that for anybody. I'm the voter. I'm the prom queen. You're the prom queen. You're the voter. You are the most important person. Bend a knee to us. Make us happy. That's your job as a politician. It don't work the other way around. And if the RNC wants to stay in our good graces, they need to be making sure they're sending conservatives into Congress and endorsing and backing conservatives in Congress. They need to stop, like they're going after Trump got mad at Bob Good because Bob Good endorsed DeSantis during the primary. And then Bob Good turned around. He's running for office in Congress. Turned around. He went up there for the trial. He was standing up there at the trial. He backed Trump. And, you know, obviously, he primaries are weird things. They're just the way it is. But if you bring baggage from the primary into the general, when I see people out there doing that, I suspect they're plants. I think that they haven't been conservatives. They're horrible strategists. And I think that they're trying to tank 2024. And they have definitely haven't put in the work that a lot of us have put in order to try to act like the bouncer for the movement because they just got active in the past couple of years. Oh, hell no. I get really aggravated about this stuff. It's about strategy. You're not going to secure a good house with lower taxes by nominating and endorsing rhinos for a house. You're not going to do it. So they need to really rethink this stuff. I don't care where people were during the primary. Either you're on the same page as me for 24 or you want to lose. And if you want to lose, you're my enemy. They're the voters' enemy. So let's stop this. Let's all get on the same page. Because Democrats, and this is what I'm going to share with you here coming up. Boy, oh boy, do I got something for you. Democrats are dropping cash now. I told you they have a half a billion dollar war chest, didn't I? They are dropping cash into these seats. I have a piece from Axios that looks at publicly reported numbers, millions into down ballot races in battleground states. This is where the fight is. We're going to talk about it. So there's a company that I just started using called Ammo Squared, and Ammo Squared helps you stay stocked up on ammunition, like automatically. It's a truly automated system. You set it and you forget it. It's an ammo purchasing program, and you can pick whatever caliber you want. You can set your budget. You can select your shipping, and that's it. And the cool thing is that it builds up. Your ammunition builds up over time, and it's stored in this climate-controlled warehouse, and it sends it automatically when you want it, when you have it selected to send. And ammunition is a hard asset. I mean, it's something that's tangible. I think we all remember the uncertainty, like back in, 2019, 2020, when there were certain calibers that were kind of hard to find. And we ended up calling, we were calling some of our retail friends and saying, when do you get a shipment of this? Can we get some? Can we lay claim to some when it comes in? And in times of uncertainty and inflation, the value of all this stuff only goes up. So Ammo Squared is there to help smooth out the rough spots of ammunition availability. It's like an ammo 401k or something like that. You set it up. You have ammo for that rainy day when store shelves are empty and ammo's hard to find. So you can learn more and you can sign up today at AmmoSquared.com and ensure that you're prepared for whatever may come your way. That's AmmoSquared.com.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
We are always there for these kids. These are our kids, and we need to make sure that we are lifting them up and giving them a path to success. So we are working very hard to make that happen. And because we now, and this shows that representation matters, 10% of the California legislature is now LGBTQ, 12 out of 120.
Who cares? It's how you choose to have sex. And don't claim that it's not. It's how you choose to have sex. what you do with your genitals, and you make a whole thing about it. There's a whole month celebrating what people want to do with their genitals. Oh, don't act like it's anything other than that. Don't sit here and try to elevate it and act like it's some great struggle. Shut up. We are such an indulgent society. We have it too good as a society. We forgot what actual struggle is. Good heavens. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. Who's that dude? That's out in California, obviously. Oh, of course that's his name. Of course it is. Of course. Yeah. California State Senator Scott Wiener.
That's right.
Senator Wiener.
That's right.
Senator Wiener wants your kids.
Ugh.
Wiener wants your kids, man. It's kind of messed up. When you say that in the context of celebrating sex, that's weird. And that's what it is. Don't sit here and act like it's something else. Don't act like, well, it's, you know, that's I keep having people try to tell me it's more than that, Dana. What is it more than? Are you doing some great work? Are you doing some great service? Are you feeding the poor? Are you helping the homeless? Are you bringing peace to conflicted lands? No, you're having sex. You're having sex. That's what it is. You're choosing to have sex in a certain way. And you want a whole flipping month to celebrate it with a flag and everything. And then you got to have all the products affirm how you choose to have sex. If you want, that's the thing. Don't sit here and tell me that it's about equality or anything else, because you're demanding special accommodation, which is the opposite of equality. Don't claim that you want to fit in and do everything but that. We got a lot more on the way. Stick with us. Second hour coming up. We got the Hunter Biden trial, the Joe Biden senility question. Oh, and then Bo Biden has skeletons too, but he's dead now, but he still has skeletons. Stick with us. Hillsdale is a small Christian classical liberal arts college in Southern Michigan. I just got to say, I've run into an extraordinary amount of people who've gone to Hillsdale. All these people that I keep running into that have these, that are very, very smart, and they're working in analysis and strategy, they all went to Hillsdale. Hillsdale's churning them out. And I think they're like the only one. You got to save America, Hillsdale. And you can help actually Hillsdale do that. I'm not kidding. That's their pursuit. They want to defend liberty through education. And that's been their hallmark since their founding in 1844. So one of the ways they're doing that is they're asking for your input. You can take a survey on presidential selection at Dana4Hillsdale.com. Now, why am I asking that? Because the Marxist left has been pushing to just abolish the Electoral College. They want direct democracy, which is mob rule. It's literally a bunch of wolves and one sheep voting on what to have for dinner. That's it. That's what they want, though. 18 states have signed on to overhaul how presidents are elected. Hillsdale desperately needs your views on this because they want to understand the views of mainstream Americans on this critical issue so they can factor that into their work in defending liberty. So you can access this at Dana4Hillsdale.com. Start your national survey on presidential selection today. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com.
And the thing is, Paula, you know, this is a good point that Jennifer makes, is that one of the things that red state governors, like the governors of Texas and Florida, have done is they've sent the problem, if you want to call it a problem, of undocumented people, and they've shipped them all over the country, like the old, you know, segregations and the civil rights used to put black people on buses to say, hey, let's send them to your city so that you will be upset. And
wait, what? First off, whose wig did she snatch? Because that, come on, you're appropriating. That, well, it looks like Trump's hair. It actually looks like a hair, Boris Johnson had a haircut. First off, welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you, top of the second hour. Listen coast to coast terrestrially. You can also watch the simulcast, the video component, which you can stream on channel 347 DirecTV. Watch us on X, Rumble, Facebook, YouTube, all that good stuff. So I got to point this out, and I made note of this earlier on social media. So sanctuary cities and sanctuary states literally advertised their refusal to cooperate with ICE, their refusal to cooperate with customs, border and customs. And also absent from her criticism here is the acknowledgement that Biden has been doing the exact same thing for longer with less fanfare. Oh, except he was actually a segregationist. Oops. He actually was a segregationist. So she misses that with her rambling here. Everything's got to be about race to her. This has to be hers has to be the most boring damn show to produce. Honestly, every day it's the same thing. What are you going to talk about today, Joy? Racism. What are you going to talk about today, Joy? Race. What are you going to talk about today, Joy? Racism. What are you going to talk about today, Joy? Race. It's the same thing every day. It gets boring. Like, you, she can't offer any other analysis because she has to see, that's her grift. She has to see everything through that lens. Where's the acknowledgement that Joe Biden was doing this a hell of a lot longer? I mean, hell, send Joe Biden out there to take the win on that. He was doing this before Abbott and DeSantis and everybody else. He was loading people on planes and sending them to wherever. Oh, but y'all didn't criticize that because you're all hypocrites. That's why. Because he's a Democrat, except he's an old white segregationist. He literally championed it. No, I mean literally. Go back and see what he said in the day. He's been in office longer than I've been alive. Go back and see what he said. He literally championed segregation. He opposed the integration of schools. And to that, he's on video saying he didn't want his kids growing up in a racial jungle. That's Joe Biden. So he's literally, you're defending an actual segregationist while you're accusing other people of what you think are segregationist policies, things that Joe Biden actually started. It just blows the mind. Do they not know the history of their own party? Do they not know what their party did 5 years ago? Good heavens. So where's the criticism of that? That's how you know these people don't mean anything that they say. If you cannot acknowledge that your own side's been doing this and started it, I can't take you seriously on anything else. I can't. Consistency is key. It doesn't matter whether you're on the right or left. You can still be on the left and have your leftist positions, and you can be on the right and have your rightist positions, but you got to be consistent. Otherwise, you're just a damn hypocrite sellout, and you shouldn't be taken seriously. And she's one of them. I mean, I'll give Biden credit. He started this. I'll give him credit when he was vice president under Barack Obama, and they were separating kids at the border. I mean, they could have ended the Flores Agreement immediately so that people weren't renting a kid to get across the border, but they didn't do that. So at least they were trying to separate kids from these strange adults that they were coming across the border with, because an inordinate amount, and there was an IG report on this that came out like 2 years into the practice, that discovered that there were a lot of kids that were coming across the border with people that they, A, didn't even know, or B, weren't even blood relatives. That's troubling. If you want to pretend to care about child sex trafficking, that's pretty bad. Let's fast forward to today's times. I shared with you that New York Times article a couple of months ago. I've included in the prep email many times, where they just discovered that about, 80,000 kids went missing. No idea where they went. No idea. I'm not making that up. That's the New York Times that wrote that. You know, that bastion of conservatism. More conservative than Reagan, the New York Times, right, Kane? That's what they're known for, their legacy. They wrote that. And they quoted... Was it Becerra? No, it wasn't Becerra. It was Mayorkas. They quoted him as saying that he was upset that they were not properly fast-forwarding these kids through the process efficiently enough. They thought it could go faster. And he said that Henry Ford would have been disappointed that it didn't run like a conveyor system, assembly line. And, of course, now they can't account for all these kids. It's just truly stunning. So I hear sound bites like that, and it makes me mad because they don't care. These people don't actually care about illegal immigrants either. They don't care. They don't give a rat's ass what's happening down in Mexico. You know what? They're sitting here defending the guy who snorts this stuff that is the number one product for the people sending people across the border. I mean, he's their number one customer. You got the cartel's number one customer, who is the son of the president of the United States. They're going to act like they care. Hell, they fund the stuff that keeps it going. It goes up their nose. Come on. Now, a couple of other things. At least Mayorkas, audio soundbite 7. Where is he getting to by saying this? Listen to this. This is Alejandro Mayorkas.
We then went into an arduous, hardworking process to develop bipartisan Senate legislation that would have fundamentally fixed our asylum system and once and for all properly resourced this department and the departments of justice and state. Twice Congress failed to pass that legislation, and so the president took this executive action within his lawful authority.
Yeah, well, it wasn't in his lawful authority. And he said only Congress can provide the enduring solution. Well, they could have, but also you have to realize the president's leadership, too. They were telling Democrats, were like, no, we can't support H.R. 2. We can't do this. They didn't want any funding for the border. They wanted every dollar that could have gone. We don't need 100 machines to scan for fentanyl. We don't need 100 more immigration judges. That's what he's talking about doing. That's included in his executive order. He wants to fund that. The word that he used in the press conference that he held yesterday was investment. You guys know what that means. Sidebar. When you invest in something, do you get something out of it? Do you invest just for fun? Do you invest because you don't expect a return on your money? Because there's a difference between welfare and investment. There's a difference between charity and investment. There's a difference between theft and investment. This isn't an investment. You're not getting a return for the money that's being spent on what he thinks he needs for this executive order for the border. You're not getting a return on that in lowered crossings. You're not getting a Border Patrol is not getting a return on that in terms of more manageable deluge across the southern border. They're not getting a return on that. You're not going to get a return on decreased amounts of fentanyl coming across the border. You're not going to get a return on the number of resources being depleted by the influx of people entering illegally. You're not even going to get your damn money back with interest. You're not going to get anything back. So let's stop. That's like asking someone, can I borrow a tissue? Are you going to give it back used? This is an investment. This is not an investment. It's theft. It's wasteful spending because it's not accomplishing anything. Wild. Just wild. Now, the loopholes in this, let me touch on this. Free Beacon had a nice wrap up because there are a number of loopholes in it. The memo is out publicly. They said, oh, well, we're going to shut the border down after 2,500 average illegal crossings a day over the course of the week. But they said any non-citizen may be permitted to enter under, quote unquote, urgent humanitarian conditions. Well, they're going to try to redefine what a humanitarian condition is. They've already done it. They've already been doing it. They're saying if it's an acute medical emergency, that's a new thing. Imminent extreme threat to life or safety, severe trafficking in persons. Those are things that are going to be incorporated into whether or not. So you're going to have a bunch of, oh, I got a medical emergency. Oh, I got this. Yeah, that's what you're going to have. Fear of return also is a claim. Now, how many people can just claim that? These are all actual. This is included in the memo. The memo literally states that even if someone is placed in expedited removal, they can claim a fear of return, and that can be nonverbal. What? That's what the memo states. And they could be temporarily relieved of immediate deportation as a result of that. See what I'm saying? This isn't going to do anything. This is a joke. This is an optic. This is not going to decrease a damn thing. Nothing. And it's completely under HHS's discretion as to whether or not they'll close the border even with that number. That number doesn't immediately, automatically trigger a moratorium on crossings. That's up to the discretion, again, of a bureaucrat in D.C. that wasn't elected. Fascinating, isn't it? This is what we're dealing with. Now, I got a few other things we got to get into. We've been talking about Democrats and the polling, et cetera, on this. This is a Forbes piece. There are a number of states that, six states particularly, that are being slated as states to divide that are going to determine the election. One of the reasons that I thought Trump should pick Brian Kemp as a VP is because Georgia is one of them. Trump is only within margin of error lead in that state. Now, RCP's average, I think it's tighter than that because the RCP will include push polling and campaign firm polling, meaning it can be literally a very slanted poll just to get a number that they can use in a press release merch off as a headline. So they have the Real Clear Politics average, like for Georgia, for instance. I mean, it's within the margin of error because the polls that they're citing, they got a Fox poll, The Hill, Emerson, New York Times, Siena, Cook Political Report, Bloomberg, Morning Consult. The Fox poll and I thought the New York Times poll were oversampled in favor of Republicans. I think it's a lot closer than that. I'm not trying to say that as like an insult to the candidate. I'm telling you, don't get comfortable. So you're going to rest on your laurels with stuff. I feel like they're trying to set you up to make you think like, oh, it's in the bag. They've done this before. They will present to you misleading polling, like when they were telling you there's a red wave coming in 2020. You know why it didn't manifest? Because they lied to you. They wanted to make you feel like it was going to be okay, that you didn't need to do anything. And guess what? People bought it. And Republicans already have a problem with not turning out. I will tell this story until I'm blue in the face. I live in the most conservative district in Texas that Ted Cruz lost by 2,000 votes. And it's not because there are more Democrat voters in this district than Republicans. It's that there were 3,000 registered Republican voters that did not vote. They did not turn out. And so that turned into a narrative. Oh, Democrats are making inroads in Texas. And guess what that did? That convinced big money donors to start spending more in Texas because of that. You see the domino effect here? This is why we got to nix this stuff. So I don't want you all to get comfortable with this. These six states, you got Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. I think if you had Kemp as a VP, you'd lock up Georgia because he's still pretty well regarded in Georgia. And that would be huge. We're going to talk more about this because Pennsylvania's an interesting one as well. But you can't think that Georgia, just because it's a southern state, that it's a red state. It's been pretty purple. Our partners over at Kel-Tec, it's a great Florida-based company that a lot of people try to rip off because they're just not as smart, and they're not as innovative with their designs, and they're just not as good at designing guns like Kel-Tec. I'm just going to say it. George Kellgren immigrated from Sweden, went to beautiful Florida, and launched a boomstick company. And very innovative. They create pistols, rifles, shotguns, all kinds of stuff, gear, accessories, all the good, you know, all that. They got the new Gen 3 sub 2K. I have the Gen 2. Light, foldable, effective. You don't have to detach your optics. You just fold it in half and get up and go. It's nice. And it's an awesome 9mm carbine. They've done a couple of other upgrades in addition to not having to detach the optic. You've got lightened action for easy racking, ambidextrous bolt hold open. They also reconfigured some of the trigger, so it's a light and 5-pound pull, all for improved accuracy, translating to improved manipulation as well. Quality made right here in the U.S. of A. See everything Kel-Tec has to offer at KelTecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Red Lobster, guys, they're closing another 135 restaurants if landlords are not agreeing to the chain's requests. They're going to close another. They've already abruptly closed 93 of its 700 some odd restaurants. They filed for Chapter 11 because of all-you-can-eat shrimp. I still cannot. I'm still. Why has not South Park done a whole thing on this? The endless shrimp, that killed them. So they, Can I sidebar? I'm sorry. I know we got a limited time, but at some point during the Endless Shrimp Fest, wouldn't you just like stop it and be like, okay, this, we got to rectify this situation. Wouldn't you do that instead of letting it go?
It's not just the shrimp though. Let's be real.
You don't think it is?
No.
I'm fully bought into it. Okay.
I'm sure
anyway,
it might be part
they
of
said
that,
they could close all of them. I don't know. I feel like Red Lobster, it's going to be sad if that closes. This is the actual headline. Why are Americans feeling so negative about the economy? Are you serious? Really? Steve saw Senator John Kennedy while he was out jogging yesterday. And Senator Kennedy was saying that we got a sugar high on the economy. And then he also was slamming the executive order. He said that he's in trouble politically and he's right up there with fungal infections. Biden. Yeah, there you go. Ex-Intel officials warn they're trying to say that Trump could weaponize U.S. spy services. This is from NBC. You mean like, I don't know, get 50 some odd spy chiefs to sign a letter saying that an absolutely real laptop with incriminating evidence about the president of the United States and the first son and first family is fake and Russian disinformation when in fact it's real, so real that it was actually entered into evidence yesterday for a trial? Just like that. Interesting. And the donkey from Shrek, it's a real donkey. It's based on a real donkey. And it got a $10,000 government grant to help pay for its care. It lives in California, in Palo Alto. This donkey got a grant, but veterans can't. Okay, just wanted to say that. We got more to come. Stick with us. Our partners that help bring you free radio, it's our friends over at Patriot Mobile, the only Christian conservative cell phone service in the country. And Patriot Mobile not only wants to save you money, but they want to make sure that they're having your money not work against you. And that's the thing with a lot of these big cell phone services. You have to realize that they all have political action committees that they give money to, and they support DEI and gun control and, you know, abortion on demand, taxpayer funded, all of that stuff. That's not what Patriot Mobile does. Patriot Mobile, first off, they're going to give you free activation when you use code Dana. I mean, so that's an additional bonus. But they also have the best, most reliable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. You're getting the same great service. You're not funding the left. And you work with a 100% U.S.-based customer service team. So you're creating and maintaining U.S.-based jobs. They make it easy to switch. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and use promo code Dana to get that free activation. Make the switch to my cell phone service today. That's PatriotMobile.com/Dana, 972-PATRIOT.
Ready to grow your intellectual Rolodex? Download the Dana Show podcast and join the ranks of those who refuse to settle for the same old boring content on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, people know I started my career as a prosecutor. You may not know why. One of the reasons is my best friend in high school, I learned, was being molested by her stepfather. So she came to live with us, and I decided at a young age I wanted to do the work of fighting to protect women and children from harm. And the idea that these laws would make no exception even for a survivor of a violation to their body.
That's an absolute lie.
And to tell that woman, that person.
Shame on you.
You don't have a right to make a decision about
what
happens
to you.
Shame on you.
That's immoral. She's trying to say that that's, I can't even let her finish. I think it's immoral to misrepresent what rights women have and lie to them and make it seem like they don't have certain rights when they actually do. So that you make them feel more helpless and so that you can manipulate them. That's what abusers do. And so I find it incredibly ironic that Kamala Harris is sitting here pretending to bemoan abusers when she's acting like one. Don't adopt the behavior of abusers while you claim to want to defend women from them. Welcome back from the to the program. Dana Loesch with you, bottom of this second hour. And that's exactly what it is, too. I mean, it's, you know, the idea that it's they send her out to do this stupid stuff. Of course, I think that's kind of all she can do. It is pandering and it's insulting and it's offensive. Just like how like Biden was getting roasted on TikTok because they try to act like they try to do this big outreach to the black community, which is kind of racist the way that they approach it, because they act like the black community isn't concerned with jobs and inflation and everything else, too. And they got thousands of comments like, why are groceries so expensive? Why is gas so expensive? Why is my dollar not worth as much? Like, why can't I afford as much? I mean, they got roasted in the comments for it. It was pretty amazing. But that's what Democrats do. And this idea, I don't know, the whole thing is just frustrating. It's incredibly frustrating to hear that misrepresented. Those laws in the cases of, rape, incest, life of the mother. I mean, this is all stuff that's already in state laws around the country. And so if she's unhappy that it does, if she thinks it should go, it doesn't go far enough in certain states, then that's on Democrats. Democrats did not do anything to try to change this state by state. They were so focused on the federal aspect of this that they just ignored the state issues. So they didn't strategize, and it's everybody else's problem. Except those, what she mentioned, are actually, that's codified, that's part of this, that's still allowable in states. There isn't a state that doesn't allow for those exemptions. That's a lie. She's lying to you. And that's abhorrent and immoral. And if you have to lie to people, that means you know that your position is a losing one. If you have to misrepresent and lie to people about what the position is, that is immoral. That's abhorrent. And it's also pandering. Women, this is 2024. Why do Democrats still act like the only thing women care about are free things and abortions? Stop it. You know, there are women business owners that are concerned about the economy. There are women in their households that are making the financial decisions that are concerned about the economy. You know, women and men are going out and they're seeing what the prices are in their grocery stores. They know what it costs to fill up their car. They're knowing how far their dollar's going. They see resources being depleted over insurgences at the border. You know, they care about more than just this superficial stuff. And it is a superficial issue because you're basing it on a lie. It's this old argument. I'm so tired of it. course, we've got all of this with the immigration. New York Post had a piece on the restrictions. There was a memo the day that Biden announced this. The New York Post notes that a memo was sent to ICE officers mandating, as I talked about last segment, the new measures to make it as easy as possible for people to claim asylum through credible fear. That's included in the memo. The New York Post has that piece that gets into all of that. And remember, as I said, it doesn't even have to be verbal. So what does that mean? What do you mean nonverbal? Your fear, you're afraid to return back to your home country. How do you express that nonverbally? In order for someone at the border to go, no, we're going to remove you from the expedited deportation process. You see how they're doing everything possible to, they act like it's a big deal that what they're doing is they are, he's working really hard to close the border to try to satiate the concerns from these border state Democrats, et cetera, and everybody else worried about it. He's not really doing anything. He's not doing anything. Not at all. Now, in the meantime, I wanted to share this with you. You have this happening. You also have Republicans fighting over stupid stuff. Republicans fighting over different House seats, fighting over who was loyal during the primary. And Democrats are pouring millions into down ballot races in battleground states. Now, remember how I was telling you about the battleground states to watch out for? We had this huge discussion because in Virginia, you have Republicans arguing over different House candidates. And Senator Rand Paul is campaigning for a guy named Cameron Hamilton. And others think that Hamilton's primary opponent is better. It's a crucial swing district. And I think they're trying to make the factions to be about different policy squabbles. It's really who endorsed whom in the primary. Those are the factions. And it's so stupid. It is so dumb that this is actually a thing that is hampering our ability to win the House. In the meantime, you know, I told you that you had Pennsylvania, you had Georgia, you had Wisconsin, you had Arizona. These are states where these are states that are going to determine the election. And in Arizona, they're spending tons of money now. They're opening the spigot. They have $500 million to spend. And they're starting. Now it's kicking into gear. They're hoping to flip or reach ties in chambers in Arizona, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Democrats have been fighting to keep GOP from becoming a supermajority in the assembly in recent years in Wisconsin. These are states where down ballot races are going to help drive momentum for upticket. And they are really pushing it. Multi-million dollar efforts this week alone. And they're looking at these down ticket races. This is dangerous because the RNC is not doing this. They're not. They are not doing this. I have done activism. I've been in broadcast for a long time, but before then I was an activist. And I've talked to so many people in so many states because I traveled around the country for over a decade. And I never got paid for any of this stuff. I didn't need to. I wasn't poor eating dirt out in the desert, you know. But I wanted to go help. And it was also with the expectation that people and those activists in those states, when we needed it in our state, would come and help. And they did that as a return of the favor. But you wanted to make sure that you were creating strongholds wherever you could, because you knew that that momentum would drive upward. And I'm talking to people now, people that I know from those days, from traveling all around the country, who are still involved with politics and are still working at the grassroots level. And they are livid, to say the least, at the MIA-ness of the RNC. And there's no excuse. You got the candidate's daughter-in-law helping to run it. There's no excuse. This down-ballot stuff needs to be as much of a focus. It's so incredibly important. Otherwise, you're not going to have a House. You're not going to have a Senate. You're not going to be able to control any kind of impeachment. You can get the House. You can get the White House all you want to, but if you don't control the power of the purse and you don't have the ability to be able to have your Republican president veto something without it being overridden in a chamber, that's bad. Everybody sees this, right? So they're starting to spend a lot of cash money. The spigot's opening, and they just started. They've just started. And they are desperate. Never underestimate the ferocity of a desperate Democrat. They are desperate to keep power. You already seen what they're willing to do. And that's not even, that's just the tip of the iceberg. I'm telling you, you got to, this has to be a priority within the Republican Party. Now, coming up, a couple of the things we're going to discuss. Got some law and order to touch on, because there's, this has been pretty wild. Some of these stories that I've been seeing, and I got some economic stories for you. But in Chicago, did you guys hear what happened in Chicago? This is a horrible story. A woman, her and her husband were attacked. They were on a date. They were on a date night. She was pregnant, 41 years old. They were attacked by a gang of teenagers. They beat her in her stomach and she miscarried. She said, she told Fox 32 she was pepper sprayed in the face. They pulled out her hair. They held her husband back, the mob did, as they beat her. Police arrived and arrested a 14-year-old and a 17-year-old. They ripped clumps of hair out of her head. She's got bald spots now. They beat her up and they killed her baby. You know, they actually removed that as an actionable offense in Illinois, causing a miscarriage where it can't be prosecuted as like a homicide. So they're just going to get slapped with, like, you know, basic misdemeanor battery charges and that's it. And they screamed at them, "We own the street. We on the street. You can't walk around prancing in your dress." And 41 years old, doubt she'll be able to get pregnant again. That's sad. It's horrible. We're going to talk about some of the law and order in this, because this is the only horrible story like this. There was an Ohio boy that is this is crazy, is attacked. And then we got the story of a comedian and this dad who went at it on stage in our law and order segment. So we're going to get into all of this. We got culture as well. I got some economic headlines for you, too, as we roll towards Florida Man, the sanest part of our day, believe it or not.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Suburban moms everywhere are going to cringe in horror when they hear this headline. A Florida man is accused of whacking an officer with a Stanley cup after breaking into the church. Mm-hmm. So y'all know the Stanley. It's just, everybody loves their Stanleys. They make Stanley fannies, little fanny packs for your Stanleys. Stupidest thing I've ever seen. Hate that I didn't come up with it. I could be rolling in cash money. Anyway, Palm Bay, Florida. Florida man found himself behind bars. He broke into a church, tried to smash a police officer in the head with a Stanley cup. Timothy Bornman. I'm supposed to believe this dude's 24 years old, Kane.
I know.
I'm calling shenanigans.
Is this 42?
I don't know, man. He was arrested and charged with burglary, criminal mischief, battery and law enforcement officer, resisting arrest. It was at the Mission Church in Palm Bay. He broke into the church, grabbed a sledgehammer, broke the front door to get inside, damaged everything in sight, $10,000 plus worth of damage. He was yelling and cussing at churchgoers, telling them he was going to blank them up. And then as an officer approached, he had a metal Stanley cup, and he tried to hit the police officer with it. The officer dodged it so he didn't get hit in the head, but it hit his shoulder. Borman tried to run away. Officer tased him. He went down. They took him into custody, and he admitted to everything. But oh my gosh, like he's in custody on almost $18,000 bond. So all the women are going, how are you going to do your Stanley cup like that? How are you doing your Stanley? You can't say Stanley cup. You just call it a Stanley, right? I don't like drinking out of plastic bottles, so I drink out of a thermos.
Was that the only one that thought it was the, you know, the NHL?
Yeah, I first thought it was the hockey. I was how does that church have a Stanley cup?
That was the NHL trophy.
I had to literally go two graphs into this story to realize that there wasn't a Stanley cup in the church. I was like, how's this church get a Stanley cup? Anyway, it was a Stanley, the thermos. So you got to be careful that you can't just say Stanley cup. It's just a Stanley. Otherwise, all the hockey people are going to go, what? Anyway, I can't really pass judgment on him either. Kane's like, yeah, I'm not really mad about it. Seminole County man is accused of destroying nearly $100,000 worth of automated license plate readers. 35-year-old Eric Fielder He's accused of causing significant damage lately. I love that lead-in. He's got 8 separate allegations of criminal mischief, etc. They've been using automated license plate readers to solve a lot of local criminal cases. And this guy apparently was just, he's something like the French would do. He starts damaging all of them. It's like $90,000 to replace all the automated license plate readers that he damaged. He wouldn't say why he did it. He refused to give a statement. So they said that license plate readers help find the missing. People wanted for criminal behavior, etc. They call it a critical investigative tool. That surely can't be abused for the state at all, right, Kane?
The surveillance state, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't like red light cameras either. I always was like, if I ever get a red light, I am going to show up in court. I will become a hell on earth to deal with for the whole court. They're going to be like, get her out of here. Take case dismissed.
I mean, it's like how they packaged the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
So it's for your safety. It's all these good tools, guys.
I'm going to tell you, when they started putting all them red, before we moved to Texas, and they have some around Texas, but I learned everything I could about red light cameras, the law, the Fourth Amendment, everything. I was like, get me one. Send me a notice. I am waiting for it. I am waiting to walk in. I will represent myself. I am waiting. Oh, my gosh. Because everyone's like, if you show up, normally they're like, whatever. Because it's a complete absence of due process. Anyway, I'm going to get on a huge rant about this. So let's move. Because I can't really get mad at him, right? It's vigilanteism, but right?
It's against the surveillance state. So.
Yeah. I mean, am I supposed to feel bad? I'm torn. Steve, how should we feel? Like, we should feel bad?
I don't know. I only feel bad because that particular municipality will have to tax their citizens.
True.
Or use their citizens' tax dollars to repair it. But,
yeah, I agree.
All other aspects of it I like.
Yeah, I agree. Let's see here. This, Coral Springs, Florida. This guy was accused of pushing a whole stolen Coca-Cola fridge through a neighborhood. Okay. There's video. It's not the best quality, but there's video. Police arrested a guy they caught pushing a massive, huge, like giant red Coca-Cola brand refrigerator literally down the street after midnight. Residents called police when they saw Francisco Hernandez, 34, stolen from a Walmart, past a home in their neighborhood, and they confront him. He's got it on a wheelbarrow, and he goes, "What are you doing with this?" And Hernandez goes, "Just here." He's just putting it here in the street.
Mexican Coke?
It's just a Coke, yeah. Stick with us, third hour on the way. Andy McCarthy joins.
What we have is a continued effort by the federal government to fail to secure the border of the United States, and Americans are dying or getting shot. In this case, law enforcement getting shot, 2 young women who are dead. My question for you with respect to the department is, do you believe that Texas has a right to defend itself and to ensure that people who are in this country are not here illegally, and that we can protect the citizens of Texas from people unlawfully here who are committing crimes to Lizbeth Medina, who's no longer with us because the federal government refused to do its job?
Yeah, and this new executive order isn't going to help at all. Welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch with you, top of this third hour. And our friend Andy McCarthy is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. And we're going to get into everything, not just to get his... He's you know, obviously had a lot to say about the verdict in New York from last week, but on Hunter Biden's trial, he's claiming, which I, you know, the Biden administration is trying to influence, sway the jury on that. We're going to discuss that as well. So a lot of stuff to hit coming up with him and this executive order. It's not doing anything, but this is also why you shouldn't govern with executive order. I mean, Trump made a lot of these moves, and these were moves that the Congress should have made. But when you're administrating by executive order, it can be undone by executive order. And that's always the downside. I wanted to play. I got a few odds and ends to get to, and I got some economic headlines as well. I wanted to play for you this soundbite, though. You guys remember Pierre Poilievre? He's up in Canada. He is like one of the conservative leaders up in Canada, and he is a staunch enemy politically, of Justin Trudeau. He was the guy who was chewing the apple when that one reporter was trying to do gotcha journalism on him. And he's like, who says that? And he's eating his apple and just very nonchalant. He surgically destroys this guy about when he's speaking about the housing market in Canada and the way that he handles with such fact. He's not mad. He's just informed. I think he just gives a master class on how to deal with the press and how to deal with the opposition. Audio sent by 22. You got it. This guy's great.
My question is regarding the housing problem. CHMC has said that Canada needs 5.8 million houses to restore the housing affordability. Liberals say that they have that already in the budget to be focused on the housing and the fairness for the Canadians, which you disagree. Why do you disagree, and what's your opinion?
Okay, I don't disagree. The math disagrees. They promised they're going to double home building. Their own housing agency said since they made that promise, home building has gone down, and that it will go down next year and the year after that. Look at my exchange with Trudeau in the House of Commons last week. To get to 3.9 million, forget 5.9 million, to get to 3.9 million new homes by the scheduled deadline of 2031 that Trudeau promised, he needs to build 550,000 homes a year. I asked him six times in the House of Commons, are we going to build 550,000 homes this year? He wouldn't answer. Well, the truth is he's on track right now to building about 200,000 homes.
I just
not
like
even half of what
how
he's promised.
Knowledgeable he is on all this stuff. And he always either has coffee or an apple or something. That one clip where he was chewing that apple, it was like sound effect. It was hysterical. And who says that? What page? Well, who says what? It's great. But he's the one of the conservative leaders up in Canada, Pierre Poilievre. They need more of him, and we need more people in the U.S. to be able to deal with the media and the opposition like this. I want to switch gears, talk about some law and order and this heinous story of what happened in Chicago. This woman lost her unborn baby after she and her husband were attacked on a date night by a gang of teenagers. She's 41, and she would only be identified as Nina. She was speaking with the press, Fox 32. They arrested a 14-year-old boy and a 17-year-old girl. They stomped on them. They came up and attacked them from behind. They ripped her hair out in clumps. She has bald patches on her head. They dragged her on the ground. They were kicking her in the stomach. They pepper sprayed her in the face. They held her husband back and beat him. Just heinous. And guess what? They're only getting charged with a count of misdemeanor battery. And then they released them. Because, you know, Illinois changed the law where if you cause the death to an unborn baby, you don't have to be charged for that. You're not held responsible for that. That's not considered an additional murder as it is in other states. So they're out walking the streets. I think my opinion is very harsh. You might not agree. But I think it was attempted homicide. I think it was homicide. Well, homicide for the baby and attempted murder for the man and woman, and I think that they should be given the full course, if found guilty, right under capital punishment, if not capital punishment. Absolutely. This is just one video I have of a ton of videos of gangs of people beating people in the streets, right, unprovoked. I was talking to Kane about this on break. It's not video compiled from years. It's literally in the past like couple of months. I am shocked by this. Absolutely shocked.
We need to make criminals scared again.
Need to fear victims.
That was a great time in society.
This is what the progressive DAs have brought you. Because they said that they were, and she lost her baby. And she was speaking with the press, and she just, you know, do we have, like, just play the end of this, that audio when she was talking to the reporter. Because she wasn't, I mean, you can tell she's still grieving greatly. And I don't want to be harsh, but she's 41 years old, you know, and she was in her first trimester, 41 years old. You know, you're maternally, that's considered an advanced maternal age. they call it geriatric pregnancies is what they call it. That's kind of crazy, but they call it geriatric pregnancies. And they are high risk anyway. I doubt that she... I just can't imagine that she would be able to get pregnant again. But listen, this is just towards the end of the interview. Her voice, and she's not full of rage. She's just so sad. Bless her heart. Listen to this.
At Grand and McClure, the crowd started and charged a 17-year-old girl and a 14-year-old boy.
Yeah,
the teens aren't in police custody. Alderman Brian Hopkins says the teens shouldn't be able to get away with this.
We're asking the state's attorney to consider upgrading those charges to felony charges resulting in great bodily harm. Both victims suffered extensive injuries, and the medical examination is ongoing.
Nina was 2 weeks pregnant and says she found out after the attack that she lost the baby she was carrying.
We believe in faith, and it wasn't meant to be. So we don't know why this happened to us, you know, and everything that we have.
Godly. And you know there's no remorse from the teenagers. Brutes only understand brutality. And I think that the law has got to be brutal in some of these respects. Completely. That's just absolutely heinous. I feel so bad for her. And this happens so often. I mean, this is crazy. So she's lost her baby. There's another video that I saw. I'm not even going to play this. They attacked, there was a woman who was attacked in Chicago. She was trying to get into a building and she couldn't get in the building. And she screamed and disappeared in the crowd because they took her to the ground and started stomping on her. I mean, there are so many of these videos, and as Kane notes, it's not even just Chicago, although there's a lot of videos coming out of Chicago. It is absolutely everywhere, everywhere. Then you have the story of this 3-year-old boy who was stabbed to death and his mom was wounded. This was in Cleveland. The woman, Margot Wood, she was loading groceries into the back of her car with her son, three-year-old little boy, loading groceries in the back of her car, and she was attacked by Bianca Ellis. Police got her walking away from the scene holding a bloodied kitchen knife. And this woman, she had her son with her. She was at the Giant Eagle supermarket, and a woman ran at him and his mother in the parking lot and began stabbing. He was sitting in the shopping cart. He got stabbed in the face. He got stabbed in the back repeatedly. A flurry of stab wounds. She just killed him. And the mother's suffered stab wounds. Hers were not life-threatening. And the crime scene, there's groceries scattered across the parking lot. And this little boy is now gone. She had two boys. The older brother now doesn't have a baby brother. You know how that's going to mess with the older brother? So this woman, she was arrested, taken into custody. She has no violent criminal history. Apparently, she only stole from a nearby Walmart. I think they need to put her to death. We don't exercise capital punishment enough. I'm a big believer in it. Because I think that we have grown too indulgent as a society of this nonsense. And you have people who think that you can rehabilitate evil, and you can't. Evil's evil. And you can only deal with evil in certain ways. And these criminals, these murderers, thrive on this indulgence from a weak society. It's just heartbreaking. Now, one last thing, Law and Order. Sometimes you FA and FO. Is that a true, is that a real Mike Tyson quote where he's like, you know, people say stuff online because they don't have to worry about getting punched in the face, something like that. Is that a real Tyson quote?
Yeah. Everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah. So this comedian was, I mean, apparently he was on Facebook, and this comedian, apparently this was in Madrid. He was on, I guess, on Facebook or on social media. And I don't know how these two came together on social media, but apparently the comedian made a pedophile-esque comment, yes, pedophilic comment about the guy's 3-month-old baby. And so the guy, the comedian is a lefty. The guy he attacked is a right-leaning activist. And he said, when your son's older, he's going to become sick of, and I can't even say what he said. So the dad showed up at the comedy club. and confronted this guy and punched him in the face. And then the comedian said that he was sorry for what happened. It was a joke. That was it was unfortunate. It was not appropriate comment on my part, et cetera, et cetera. My apologies for anyone who's affected. I really do believe that. People do say a lot of things online that they wouldn't say in public because they don't want to get punched in the face. Sometimes, you know, bullying's not all bad. Got to be real. But this is, you can't, this dad, I wouldn't convict this dad, would you? I wouldn't convict this dad. This is like a self-cleaning oven. Let it take care of itself. This is, you know, it's like the playground rules. You just got to let it go. You got to let it go. We have more on the way. We got headlines coming up. We're also going to talk to our friend Andy McCarthy. We got him. And I got some economic headlines I'm going to try to work in today. If not, I'll save it for tomorrow. But we got a lot to hit.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So yesterday, AT&T and Verizon customers had a nationwide outage. It affected a lot of stuff. They said that it was reported at least in 24 states. A lot of customers had service, didn't have service at all. AT&T acknowledged the problem, announced that they resolved the issue. I mean, it was all over, and it included 911 systems, too. And it was AT&T, Verizon, U.S. Cellular, Consumer Cellular, all had outages. Kane, I'm not saying that I think there's something shady going on. But, you know, I'm just saying there could be. The iPhone 16 Pro Max dimensions have leaked. They said it's a sci-fi form factor. It's thicker, but its bezels are thinner. It's not mind-blowing, but they said it, but apparently it's supposed to be super fast. What does it have? The M-whatever chip, the M4, something crazy. It is. Do you find that you hate using your phone to actually talk to people? Because I hate talking to people on my phone. I hate phone calls. How weird is that? I work and talk radio. I can talk to you guys like this all day. You get me on a phone with somebody, I'm like, oh my gosh, why is it happening to me? I just can't deal with it. Magnet fishing. A couple pulled up a safe with $100,000 in cash while magnet fishing in New York. Do you get to keep it? And would you tell anybody? These people, apparently, I guess they let the popo know. They told the police. They were in Corona Park. They were magnet fishing. They pulled out an old safe, they opened it, and they said it was two stacks of hundreds. It was actually, it looks pretty, like, gnarly. The money actually looks pretty grody. But still, like, if it wasn't, would you let people know? Would you? Can I be honest? Would you? I don't think I would either. I would be like, oh, this is the heavens giving me back all the stuff the government stole from me in taxes. Police say a man stole a liquor truck in hopes of selling off the booze to pay a drug debt. I mean, jobs also are great. This is in Indiana. Is that Muncie or Muncie? Muncie, Indiana. He apparently had stole a delivery truck full of beer and liquor, pulled up outside a Cheers bar, and he was going to sell the booze, pay off his drug debts. It didn't really go as planned. I don't really think that bars like just unsolicited liquor trucks pulling up either and like, hey, can you? And also, it's a liquor truck. You know, right. It's not like it's going to go unnoticed.
Now
you know what I'm saying?
Knows his name.
Yeah. A woman still alive at a Lincoln funeral home had finally kicked the bucket hours later. What in the world? This is in Nebraska. They said a woman is pronounced dead, but she came back to life in the funeral home. And then she did die. She did actually die again later, not long after. Oh my gosh. Andy McCarthy joins us next. Stick with.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast terrestrially in one of our hundreds of markets, or you can stream the radio program and you can catch the simulcast, the video component of the radio show as well. Channel 347, DirecTV, X, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, everywhere. We've been following this Hunter Biden gun case, which is fascinating. And I think it's kind of a Rorschach test as well on a number of different issues, particularly Second Amendment issues. My friend Andy McCarthy just dropped, I'm going to use the words of the kids these days, the parlance of the times, a straight fire column. on all of this, where he dives into a couple of different cases that are actually being used by Hunter Biden's defense, because they're insanely trying to argue that he was a drug user, so you can't really be shocked that he was going to lie about using drugs on a federal form. And you guys are very familiar with our good friend Andy McCarthy, bestselling author. His book, Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. And he's also a contributing editor at National Review. You see him on Fox News and former chief assistant U.S. attorney. He joins us now via Skype. Andy, always a pleasure to have you. This column, I love the way that you break things down, by the way, because you always give a master class in this. You think that Hunter Biden's defense is not going to be successful because he's actually trying to use arguments that are really in favor of the Second Amendment to kind of free himself of this mess. Just as the trial has gotten underway, what has been your initial reaction?
Well, thanks so much, Dana. And yeah, I think he's trying to tee up his appeal because he knows what the evidence is coming in. And he knows what Judge Noreika is going to instruct the jury at the end. Basically, they litigated the Second Amendment issue pre-trial. He tried to use the Bruin case in order to argue that the federal statute was on its face unconstitutional. And the statute I'm talking about here is 922 G3, the provision that makes it a crime for a user or addict of drugs to possess a firearm. So he lost on that issue. And then he tried to argue that they should instruct the jury that unless he was using drugs the moment that he made the purchase, that basically he should be acquitted. And what the judge decided was she's going to instruct the jury that the government has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he was a drug user or addict around the time of the purchase. And I think what this gets down to is after Bruin, the court made it very clear that we're going to interpret the Second Amendment right in accordance with what the original understanding of the amendment was at the time the Constitution was adopted in 1791. And at the time that the Second Amendment and the other Bill of Rights provisions were applied to the states by the 14th Amendment in 1868. But you have to show that there was an original understanding of what the right to keep and bear arms was, and that regulations are consistent with American traditions in that regard. So the issue comes down to, what do you think drug use is like? Do you think it's like alcohol abuse? In which case, the traditions of the country, you know, look, this is a hard drinking country, right? Mm-hmm. The tradition of the country is if you were intoxicated, they could take your guns away, but then they had to give them back to you, right? Or if you went into the saloon, maybe the bartender would take the gun, but you would get it back as you left, right?
Yeah.
If that's what it is, and that's what Hunter's trying to analogize his behavior to, then he's got very broad rights. On the other hand, if drug abuse and particularly drug addiction is like mental illness, then there's a long tradition in the United States that goes back to the founding that people who were declared to be insane, if they were adjudicated to be like non compos mentis, you could take a lot of rights away from them, including their right to liberty, but also their gun rights. So I think he knows he's lost in the trial court. He's hoping as a Biden in Wilmington, maybe the jury will acquit him anyway, you know, because they're very influential in that small pond there. But his main thing is he's trying to tee up, I think, for if he gets convicted here, for his ultimate appeal.
Yeah. Andy's column, it's called Hunter Biden is Playing the Long Game. And it really, I mean, it is. I know you mentioned that they had kind of litigated that before pre-trial, the Second Amendment issue, because didn't his attorneys bring up Cantor v. Barr? And that was the case where it was a nonviolent, it was a guy who was convicted of a nonviolent felony, and he was arguing that he should not be have his Second Amendment rights removed as a result of this because they're natural rights, therefore they couldn't be abridged. And it was something that Amy Coney Barrett actually had agreed with, and it was wild to see Hunter Biden's attorney cite that.
Yeah, well, it's amazing for two reasons. One is Joe Biden's a lifelong demagogue on this issue. He's one of the worst offenders. And yet Hunter's defense here is the Second Amendment. And the second thing I would point out, for all this nonsense that Hunter has said about how, you know, he's the one being singled out.
Mm-hmm.
If he was not named Biden, this offense happened in October of 2018. He would have been indicted by the end of 2018 or early 2019, and this case would be over. But because Weiss didn't indict, because he dragged his feet on this just like he dragged his feet on everything else, the case still wasn't adjudicated when Bruin got decided 4 years after Hunter bought the gun. So now he has a defense that's available to him because they delayed in charging him that wouldn't be available to the normal person.
That's amazing. That is actually amazing. Talking with our friend Andy McCarthy. Yeah, so he actually made it a little bit easier for him. That's kind of unbelievable. You had also, you said something interesting, because it's in Delaware. I mean, that's you do have to factor that into the jury pool. I mean, they can break it down to how many are gun owners and how many are this or that. But I mean, Biden's are big deals. They're still a big deal in Delaware.
Yeah, it's not just a smaller place. I remember when I grew up in the Bronx in New York, and Stanley Friedman was the Bronx borough president. And I always thought, when I was a young prosecutor, the craziest move I ever heard, we indicted Stanley Friedman in the Southern District of New York in the famous, back then, kids, this is ancient history, but, the Parking Violations Bureau case. And I always thought it was crazy that Friedman moved to get the trial out of the Southern District, and he ended up being tried in like New Haven, Connecticut. And I was always thinking, you know, a Jewish leader who was very well known in the Bronx, and who, like, if you assembled any group of 100 people, you'd get a bunch of people who, like, knew Stanley Friedman or owed a job to Stanley Friedman. And I just thought it was nuts that he moved the case out of the Bronx. And here, you know, obviously Hunter, this is a home game for Hunter. I mean, I think he's going to get convicted. The evidence against him is overwhelming. But this is not Donald Trump in Manhattan.
Yeah.
this is definitely a home game for Hunter.
We're talking with our friend Andy McCarthy. You mentioned former President Trump and the verdict that came out of Manhattan. There's a lot of people saying, because I know that they're going to go through the appeals process, and this is going to be a long process. But everyone's saying that, well, the appeals court, have you looked at the judges? Have you looked at this? It's not going to happen. But I think it could, though, because it's such an egregious, it's just wild to take what is essentially an expired misdemeanor and try to tie it to like this mystery felony, so that you can get beyond, you know, the statute of limitations in state court and then try to litigate it in the federal arena. I mean, it hasn't been tested. So I think that would kind of weigh in Trump's favor, would it not?
Yeah, it would, especially because in the end, the mystery crime was itself a misdemeanor.
Yeah.
You know, what they ended up saying was the crime that Trump was hiding was this a misdemeanor conspiracy statute in New York, an election statute, which makes it a crime for two or more people to agree to influence an election by unlawful means. And the unlawful means, of course, are the federal campaign finance laws that Bragg doesn't have any authority to enforce. So I think, you know, interestingly, the mystery crime with the being that it's a misdemeanor, it too had a 2-year statute of limitations. So Bragg's theory here is if you smush two time-barred misdemeanors where the time to prosecute actually lapsed in 2019, but he could put them together and somehow you have a felony that has now a 6-year statute of limitations that he can bring in 2023. And then the crime under the crime is a federal crime that he doesn't have jurisdiction over.
Wow.
And I haven't even begun to scratch the surface of everything else that's wrong with the case. So I think you're right that Trump will get a better quality of justice in the appellate courts. Remember, they just overturned Harvey Weinstein's conviction in New York because it was an unfair trial. Now, it took 3 years, but they did it. And in this instance, I think the New York courts are also going to know that their work is going to be checked by the appellate courts. This is not going to end at, you know, the New York Court of Appeals. It's gonna be reviewed by federal courts if there's still a conviction standing.
And that's a really good point. You mentioned, you know, it took 3 years for the Weinstein because it was so prejudicial, the stuff that they were very similar to what was being introduced in Trump's case with Stormy Daniels going on the witness stand and that. I know he had said something about trying to expedite this and just going right to the Supreme Court, which I know you can't do. You have to go through the process. But what is realistically the timeline here? I mean, is it going to be as long as a Weinstein thing?
Yeah, it could be. It could be longer if his conviction gets upheld in the New York appellate courts and it lands in federal court. That'll add another layer to it. But on your point about like people trying to leapfrog into federal court here, one of the things I think people are missing, which is an important piece of history that we have to remember here, inconvenient history for the Trump side, but history nonetheless, is that, remember, Trump tried to move this case into federal court shortly after he was indicted, and it ended up in the Southern District of New York, and a senior federal judge, Alvin Hellerstein, who was a Clinton appointee, basically sided completely with Bragg and greenlighted pretty much what Bragg wanted to do, which I think is a big part of the reason that Merchan, the judge in the New York case, was so confident they could get away with things like enforcing federal law. So for those people who say we got to get this case into federal court, it's already been in federal court. It wasn't a very good federal court decision, but it was there already. And I think that's more reason that the federal courts are going to say this has to play its way through the state court before we're going to look at it again.
Yeah, we have to follow that process. Andy McCarthy, his book, Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election, Destroy Presidency. You're going to have to write another book now. You're going to have to include all this stuff in it.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, you sound so excited. Have another bestseller on your hands.
Then
you
have to go
a week of promo for that.
To write it for me.
I know you've been busy. I've been seeing you everywhere. Our good friend Andy McCarthy, always a pleasure. Andy, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us.
Thanks, Dana.
Of course.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
Good job.
Bottom line, never trust a man whose uncle was eaten by cannibals.
Joni Ernst, her little hot mic remark, never trust a man whose uncle was eaten by cannibals. I have to ask, it was brilliantly done. She had to have been aware of the mic. And I think it was brilliant because it's so funny. If anybody's hot mic voice is hysterical, it's hers. Because it just sounds, she's got that northern accent. You know, if never trust a man whose uncle was eaten by cannibals. Just cracks me up. Okay, I got to share with you this Pope Francis audio because I feel like we had this conversation in the movie, the cinematic masterpiece, one of the greatest films that's ever been put to celluloid. And it should have won an Oscar for like best screenplay, best everything. It should have won a Tony for choreography, even though it was not on the stage. Just bend the rules. It was an amazing cinematic tour de force, Roadhouse, the film. And there was one point where Dalton was having a conversation, and that's Patrick Swayze's character, with the other bouncers, right? And they're having a conversation on, well, when it's time to be nice and when it's time to not be nice. And one of the bouncers had asked, well, what if someone calls my mama a name? And that's kind of what Pope Francis, audio sent by 23, I feel like this is what he just said here. Listen.
Sì, dottor Gasparri, grande amico, mi dice una parolaccia contro la mia mamma, ma gli aspetta un pugno. Ma è normale.
So the Pope said that if somebody insults my mother, they can basically get a punch in the face. Yeah. Now remember what Dalton said? Because the one guy's like, well, what if somebody calls my mama a whore? And Dalton goes, well, is she? And he goes, it's just, you know, a series of words put together to elicit a response. That's it. I'm just saying, see, I feel like the Pope should watch Roadhouse, you know? That was a turn the other cheek response from Dalton there. It really is, Kane, a cinematic masterpiece. Somebody asked me, they're like, okay, so how many times do you seriously watch it per year? I'm like, at least once.
Oh, yeah, once a year is about right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's several movies that I will watch if they're on. I don't really watch TV. I don't really have it on. I mean, it'll be like on news, but otherwise I don't really have it on, you know, I don't even watch cable. I don't even know why I have it. But If Roadhouse came on, I'd immediately watch it. If Godfather was on, you got to sit and watch The Godfather, particularly the first and second. The third one, maybe not so much. But, you know, the first and second, for sure. You got to watch those. So I'm just, you know, I'm just saying it is. It's a, they redid it, and I didn't even watch it. My husband and youngest son watched the second one, and it's because my youngest son doesn't understand the cinematic genius that is the original Roadhouse, that he didn't think this one was all that bad. Juan watched it, and Juan was traumatized by how horrific it was. I mean, we're trying to protect Juan's innocence and influence of bad cinema on Juan, and we failed horribly in that regard, Kane. We failed. Oh, yeah. We failed him. All right, today in stupidity, what do we got?
All right, you know, we have Kamala Harris today, and Juan...
Got a lot of her today.
She used to be Attorney General in California.
Shockingly.
And what did she do when she was Attorney General
in
California?
She jailed a lot of
people. Oh, my gosh, she jailed a lot for
like
smoking
all the
weed.
People.
Cut 19, this is her just a few years after doing that.
Well, look, I think we both agree, people shouldn't have to go to jail for smoking weed.
It gets all these applause lines right now, and she's...
Wait, didn't she like jail like more people for weed than
yes.
anybody
she
ever?
She has a history of doing this.
She's like the valedictorian of jailing people for weed. You don't even have to be a weed user.
Of all the people who jail people for weed, she's like the most jailered.
She's the biggest weed jailer, Kamala Harris. All right, folks, that does it for us today. Make sure you sign up at Substack, Chapter and Verse. Find us on YouTube, Facebook, like, and subscribe. I'll be back with you tomorrow.